June 24th, 2014, Balmoral Room, Atlas II Discussion with the SOAC Chair, Section 1.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Have you had enough sleep? No? Okay. Okay, let's start the recording, please. Maybe I should go in the middle so I can point to the camera as well. All right, good morning, everybody. This is an early morning session. I appreciate you all coming in. This is our time when we're meeting with some of the people that chair different parts or are major movers in different parts of ICANN, not only on the ALAC, but on the other parts, if we look at the overall structure. Actually, let's can we go over to the slide which shows the different component parts of ICANN, please? So this is the ICANN multi-stakeholder model diagram that we have with the different component parts. And I'm glad to add that today I have my pointer, laser pointer. So, quick recap. ICANN Board of Directors and different supporting organizations, the address supporting organization, the generic name supporting organization, and the country code name supporting organization. Of course, we are here. And then we've got some advisory committees, the Security and Stability Advisory Committee and the Root Server Advisory Committee. What we're going to be doing today is to speak to some of the people who are based in some of these other supporting organizations. And so we have Steve Del Bianco, who is with the business constituency. You can see here GNSO businesses, and he's going to be speaking to you and while interacting with you. Any questions you have about the business constituency, that's the person to ask. And then we have Rudy Van Znik and Sintra Suknanan, I think, is joining us shortly from the non-for-profit operational concerns. And that's actually, I think it's one of the, it says here consumers. But we'll see later on. We've got a diagram of the generic name supporting organizational diagram. Actually, we can swap to that because both people are from the GNSO today. We could, I'm not quite sure whether we will, but we also have it on the cards to see Heather Dryden, the chair of the Government Advisory Committee. When she comes in, we'll add her to the schedule. So the next slide, please. And in fact, two slides down. Next one. That's the one. So that's the structure of the GNSO. That's the only diagram I managed to find on one of my old presentations. I hope it hasn't changed since, because I know that here we've got non-commercial constituency. That's where the NPOC, the not-for-profit operational concerns, is. We also have the non-commercial users constituency. That's within there, the NCUC. Without taking any further time, I'll hand you over. Let's start with Steve Del Bianco, and then we'll see how we go. You've got about 10, 15 minutes or so. Steve, over to you.
Thanks, Olivier. Steve Del Bianco. And with those 10 to 15 minutes, I assume we want to do some Q&A, so I'll use no more than a moment to introduce the notion of who the business constituency, and in ICANN land, we almost always just abbreviate that to the BC. So the BC's mission, and this is somewhat unique in the GNSO structure, it's not unique because of the overlap with ALAC, but our mission is to promote policy development and enforcement that promotes end-user confidence in an internet where it's safe to do business. So the business constituency members are businesses that are registrants for websites, but in addition, registrants who are concerned about the interests of their customers, the customers who use Google, who use eBay and PayPal and Facebook. Those are our customers in the business constituency. So we are both registrants of websites and concerned about all the things that a registrant would be. But as well, we want to make sure that our customers are safe and can enjoy the, you know, consumer trust concerns. They have a lot of choices among the businesses they can visit. They have different ways to access the internet in multiple scripts and languages. We're interested in the availability of the internet, not only 24/7 and 365, but in multiple scripts and languages and in every part of the planet. All of these interests that I'm explaining are awfully coincident with what the ALAC's mission is. And yet we are constrained to look closely at the generic names space. So the ALAC has this visibility that includes the country code domains, and you're concerned with the interest of end users of content across all of those. Whereas the BC, we focus on the generic name space, and we focus on the business registrants and business users. We've had a fantastic relationship with ALAC through the transactions that occur in working groups. Most recently, Cheryl, Olivier, and I, Evan Leibovich, worked for the better part of a year and a half on helping to evaluate this new GTLD program that we're in the middle of now, helping to evaluate it against whether it really has promoted trust, choice, and competition in the domain name system. And there's a lot left to see whether we'll meet that test. Quite a bit, right? So we spent a year and a half designing metrics or measurements. We came up with nearly 70 metrics that we would suggest that ICANN use when we do the affirmation review of the new GTLD program. So the idea is to come up with measurable ways of assessing whether we really are delivering on the promises and obligations we have to end users and registrants and take it in that direction. And I'll close by clarifying one thing, is that we're very clear in the business constituency that when the internet has many facets to it, and the fact that governments, for instance, govern our behavior no matter whether we're online or offline, and it's not an internet governance question to say, how do we use the domain name system in the nature of behavior? Because we realize that ICANN's remit is rather limited. It handles the registrations of names and the resolution of names. Now, there's a lot of mischief that can be done in the registration and resolution, and we want to focus on that at ICANN, but we do try to stay away from policy issues that really have nothing to do with the domain name system. And that makes us stay a little bit more focused. I can say that our main focus right now at this meeting in the BC is the two tracks of IANA transition and ICANN accountability. We are very grateful that ICANN has finally acknowledged that the IANA transition was an opportunity to re-examine ICANN's accountability, because if the Commerce Department steps out of the role of holding ICANN accountable from the outside, well, who is going to hold them accountable from the outside? And the business constituency is submitting this week a plan for that that suggests that this cross-community structure that we have, which includes ALAC and GNSO and the GAC, that entire cross-community structure is really the entities to which the board and management need to be accountable. And so later this week we'll be unveiling our recommendation, and I do hope to join some ALAC members on the new cross-community working group to look at enhancing ICANN's accountability. I'll stop there, Olivier, and see if there are questions or anything else I can do to illuminate.
We only have one mic at the moment. Thank you very much, Steve. Shiva Subramanian Mutasami.
Thank you, Chair. The business constituency's position is more of a focus on DNS, whereas the at-large community's outlook is that ICANN's role is broader, and that it's broader to the ICANN is broadly accountable to the internet and internet community at large. So, do you see these differences? Do you foresee these differences being reconciled while you work in cross constituency working groups and arrive at a balance?
Yeah, sharpen for me the final part of that question about cross-community working groups. Could you ask that last part of the question again? I didn't hear it correctly.
With these wide differences in position, that it should have focus on DNS and that it should have a wider role, do you think these differences would be more and more reconciled while working in cross-constituency working groups?
Oh, I certainly hope so. I mean, to my mind, cross-community working groups, which include everyone at this table, having GAC and ALAC and GNSO and CCNSO and the ASO and the SX, having us all work together only sharpens that tool, because we are the community. We are the community, this whole group of folks at the table and around the room, and yet when we develop policy and send it up the ladder to management and the board, they are accountable to the organization that they work for. The bylaws require the board to look out for the interests of the organization or corporation, and that's what they're doing. And yet, the community wants to be able to hold management and the board accountable. So we've got to work together not only to develop policy, but to enforce that policy and hold management and the board accountable to us. So I hope we'll do more of it.
Thank you. No, I now have a mic as well. Next person, Garth Graham, please.
Garth Graham, you began prefacing your reference to accountability via cross-community process by saying that it was outside. In what sense is that outside?
Yeah, great question, Garth. So the ICANN accountability, enhancing the ICANN accountability track, is partly to replace the external accountability mechanism that exists today, whereby the Commerce Department could withhold the IANA contract as a form of leverage to keep ICANN, for instance, to make sure that ICANN doesn't quit the affirmation of commitments, to make sure ICANN lives within its scope, follows its bylaws. And the U.S. government is giving that up. It's not going to maintain that unique role anymore, so it falls to us to design some other mechanism. So the word external that I'm using, and internal, Garth, is reflecting board and management of ICANN, and then external to them is the community. I'm not suggesting external as in United Nations or some other intergovernmental structure. ICANN is accountable to a community. We already have a very close relationship. We elect many of the board members, but in essence, when you read the bylaws, the board is accountable to the organization. We all know that the management works for the organization, and they serve the community. They do an awfully good job of serving the community. So it's the community that should hold them accountable. So that's what I mean by external. Does that clear it up? You don't look convinced.
Garth?
Garth Graham. I certainly understand exactly what you're saying, but I don't see how that contributes to the ordinary internet user understanding ICANN's role and how ICANN is accountable in a sense of global acceptability, because the external world does not distinguish between the various parts of ICANN. They don't know these charts. And probably
nor should they.
3.2 billion of them never will.
And yet their interaction with what ICANN is responsible for still comes down to two things, the registration of names and the resolution of names. So to the extent that the world wants to register a domain name, that any citizen at any point in the planet, they are going to interact with parties following the policies and contracts of ICANN. So they become a registrant. And once a registrant, they may be concerned with things like cyber squatting and fraud. They'll be concerned with renewal policies and domain name transfers. At the same time, virtually all of the planet are internet users. And so I do think that registrants and users have voices on this accountability structure. Garth, you have a follow-up?
Very briefly, I agree with you about ICANN's mandate, but I've noticed over the last few days that ICANN's mandate extends in order to strategically address its own survival. ICANN's mandate extends to being a key actor in defining multi-stakeholderism. And so I find that ICANN is accountable for the multi-stakeholder model to the sense that they're defending it.
Yes, and that's not necessarily in ICANN's mandate. That may have been something that was politically expedient for ICANN to do, and the board probably approved this notion of being the leader of multi-stakeholderism. But those of us that practice the multi-stakeholder model from the bottom up know that it's a lot of work and it's a messy process. And if the world can learn lessons from the labors we do at ICANN, well then fine, let's do that. But the remit of ICANN is not to be the global guider for multi-stakeholderism. That's something that's nice to have, but it's not part of our core mission.
Thank you, Steve. Next is Holly Reich.
Thank you. Look, I'm sure we'll see more of your position once your paper is out. But Graham and I were actually talking yesterday for about 9 hours on accountability, so I think what you're hearing is the results of that discussion. I first want to take issue with what you say, why should the public know or care about the internal workings of ICANN. It's like nobody needs to know how the phone works. They just need to know that it works. And I think you don't need to know the internal workings of ICANN to actually have trust in the system. I think they're different things. Now, my question to you is really left over from the discussion yesterday and today that we had internally, which is, do you see in terms of accountability a hierarchy or just a difference? Because you're talking about a board and its board responsibilities and governance. You're also talking accountability of a constituency that in one sense is below it, but in another sense, I think what you're saying is it's also either above it or at least have some oversight role. So I think you're talking about not quite a hierarchy, and how you think enforceability sits in that structure. Thanks.
Thank you, Holly. And it turns out that only the last 15 seconds of what you said came through the speaker. But I like that. I like that you talked about the hierarchy and the holding of us cross community, holding ICANN accountable. And Olivier tells me that I've used all of my time at the BC, but let me refer you to a post I put up yesterday on Circle ID. And it expressly answers, I think, what our proposal will be in terms of having a structure of accountability to hold management and the board accountable to us.
Okay, thank you very much, Steve. Now, next we have Heather Dryden, the chair of the GAC, the Government Advisory Committee. If we can backtrack two slides, please. And you'll see, there we go. Government Advisory Committee, completely on the right-hand side of the diagram. And, of course, the GAC had a high-level meeting that took place yesterday. We already know the GAC is very high level, but that was even more high level than usual. So I hand you over to Heather to tell us a little bit about what's happened. We didn't see any ambulance outside, so it looks like it went quite well.
Well, far be it for me to sum up the high level meeting hosted by the UK government, but I will say good morning to you all first. And I'm not certain to what extent you're familiar with the Governmental Advisory Committee, so perhaps I could say just a few things about that first, but I'm happy to answer questions as well. So the Governmental Advisory Committee has existed almost from the beginning of ICANN, and is comprised currently of a growing membership of 141 governments and 31 observer organizations. And those observer organizations lend either regional perspectives or expert views on topics relevant to what ICANN does. Governments look at issues from a public policy perspective and generate advice that has particular standing in the ICANN bylaws. And so the advice is provided to the board. And then there are particular things that the board has to do if it determines to take an action that is not consistent with GAC advice. And so there's a whole process outlined there in the event that those things happen. It's a consensus-based committee, which means that as we grow, coming to consensus on matters takes us a long time. And it's one of the pressures on the committee and its ability to remain flexible and continue to evolve within the ICANN framework. As far as how the GAC is run, a chair and three vice chairs are elected, and the membership is, as I say, comprised of governments. But in particular, there has been a tendency to have expert-level participants in the GAC, as we call it. And this is another kind of pressure working on the committee, where it's becoming increasingly politicized, and there's a lot more interest in coming and participating in the GAC. It is seen to be influential or in an important position. The first beginning with the GTLD program, where we were given a particular role to provide advice on controversial or sensitive names. That advice came in the form of safeguards to be generally applicable to certain sets or kinds of sensitive top-level domains. And in some cases, concerns were raised by some governments within the GAC or even consensus objections to some applications or strings. And so that is, for the most part, that part of the program and the GAC's role is essentially concluded. But I heard Steve talking a bit about the IANA stewardship process currently underway, and the GAC has an expectation of participating in that. And at our meetings here, we're very much focused on dealing with those kinds of process points. So how would the GAC participate, and what are the expectations for anyone that is nominated by the GAC? to sit on the coordinating group for that. The track related to enhancing ICANN's accountability, well, it's the same thing. ICANN the GAC is wanting to deal with the process issues associated with that and make some decisions here, if possible, or at least come up with some guidance. But accountability matters are an area where governments do have some expertise. They deal with those kinds of matters at home, and so I expect that interest from a government perspective will be strong, and hopefully there will be a good contribution there from governments, including via the GAC. So that's a bit of an intro. Would this be a good place to stop for questions? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So. Are there any questions that... No questions?
No, we have a question. Garth Bruin.
Okay.
Thank you, Garth Bruin, Narella Chair. Sorry to come in late. I have a question that is for all of our communities, and it goes right to the heart of accountability. I've been digging deeply into specifically UDRP enforcement failure, and I've actually shared the details of 10 case studies with many of you. And in Singapore, we presented these 10 case studies to ICANN compliance and asked them specifically, why was there no enforcement in these cases? What happened? And this is now available in the transcript. The compliance staff said that there were global communications failures. And that's it. That's the answer. So first we had the mystery of why these were not enforced. Now we have the mystery of what was this long-term global communication failure that prevented one of the core enforcement tools from being used. And I would love to discuss with everybody a way we can get this resolved. We need to know what happened in these cases, and we need to know why there was a global communications failure. I don't think we can let this go. And it's important for consumers, it's important for businesses, and it's important for governments too. Thank you.
Thank you for raising the topic of compliance. This is very much at the core of the kinds of things that governments do pay attention to here at ICANN, and I think is one of the drivers for asking for briefings from ICANN, regular briefings from ICANN on the topic of compliance, and wanting to understand, particularly with new GTLDs now really coming online, that the organization is positioned to be able to deal with them, and to understand, really what are the facts associated with this? What are the details? And I think getting hold of good data and understanding the kinds of things that you're talking about is really essential. And I think you will have a lot of support from your colleagues in the GAC to explore that and to want answers to respond to the kinds of concerns that you're pointing out. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather. So we had Garth Bruin, now we have Garth Graham. The two Garths flock together.
This is another Garth Graham. This is another historic occasion. You just got a double Garth. Heather, I'd like to ask you a sort of national question, but I believe it becomes a kind of a case study for an area of concern for many other countries. Many countries have internet governance forums, and I believe that Canada does not. I don't consider what CIRA holds the equivalent of an internet governance forum process. You may correct me and say that there's something I'm missing, but if I'm right that there is not an internet governance forum in Canada, how would that help or hinder your role?
How it would help or hinder my role specifically?
Yes. Would you find that useful?
There are a lot of questions there. But really all I can say is that in my capacity when chairing, that's really a matter to look at separately from the Canadian government. Obviously they're related, but in chairing the GAC there is an expectation around my neutrality, and we clearly do it, and I have the support of my government because we do think it's important. It has value. The Canadian government is a long-time supporter of multi-stakeholder approaches to dealing with the technical issues that ICANN and the other internet organizations address. And so in that sense, they are supportive. And I think as far as the Internet Governance Forum particularly, clearly many countries and regions have set up internet governance forums and found them to be very useful for gathering together all different stakeholders to become active and become knowledgeable about the issues, including those that relate to ICANN. So in general, those activities are useful are considered to be one of the main successes of the Global Internet Governance Forum, that it led to those national and regional efforts. And of course they're localized. That's the value of it, is that you can set priorities and talk about issues that are relevant to a particular place and bring those results to the global forum to exchange with others at the international level. And so, you know, there are a variety of efforts that, underway in Canada that aren't really government-led, and considering that we support multi-stakeholder approaches, I think that's the right one for us. But anyway, as I say, chairing the GAC, I'm accountable to the membership as a whole in carrying out that particular task. And that is the expectation from the membership.
Thanks. Thank you, Heather. So next question is Evan. We already have a queue. So Evan Tejani and then Christopher Wilkinson. Evan Leibovich.
Thanks, Olivier. This is Evan for the record. I have a specific answer to Garth, both in the Canadian context and an international one. The IGF is something that goes beyond ICANN's remit. It deals with all sorts of things about internet governance and not just those parts of it that ICANN deals with. As such, the discussion of that goes beyond ICANN, well beyond ICANN. So I have two answers, one at a local, one at a global. I can say to Garth that there is actually work underway to have a public IGF in the spring in Canada. The Internet Society Canada chapter is working on that. In fact, last night at the meeting of chapters of the Internet Society, I raised the very issue of whether or not there was a role to play for ISOC in providing its chapters all over the world with the means and the mentoring to be able to do IGFs everywhere. And in fact, some of the response was very positive, including the likely development of an IGF toolkit being considered to enable chapters and others around the world to be able to do this kind of forum in a local environment. So I'm happy to be able to say, both on a Canadian and an international basis, there's work underway, but because that's beyond the scope of ICANN, there's a lot of other actors that need to take part in it, and I'm happy to be part of the bringing that together. Thanks.
Thank you, Evan. Steve Del Banco wanted to just add one quick thing.
Your neighbors to the south in the U.S. have held a couple of national IGFs, and we're holding one on July 16th in Washington, D.C., and we would be delighted to have some Canadian attendance at that and have it be more of a North American IGF. So you're welcome to come. You can see me for details.
Thank you. Next is Tijani Benchemam.
Thank you. Tijani speaking. Hita, as you know, there used to be a lot of tension between governments regarding internet governance. And do you think that with the transition of the U.S. government stewardship to the community, to the multi-stakeholder body, perhaps, would reduce this tension and would perhaps reduce the tension, especially regarding the enhanced cooperation?
Thank you for the question. I'm not sure I heard all of it, but you were pointing to the range of views that exist among governments regarding the ANA stewardship. And what was the specific question related to that? I'm sorry, it's hard to hear.
Do you think that the ANA transition satisfied the enhanced cooperation mandate?
Well, I can't answer that question. I mean, I think it was in your comments. The answer was there, in that you have a range of views among governments about what is the right approach, how you define the role for governments in relation to these matters, and as far as the relationship between what we would call a multi-stakeholder approach or a multi-stakeholder decision-making process and how that relates to a multilateral process. So, you know, there's such a variety of views out there for governments that it's difficult to say outside of focusing effort on the IANA stewardship proposal and putting efforts there. There are relationships to discussions happening in other places, and we will see how that plays out. It's going to be interesting to observe, certainly.
Thank you, Heather. It's Olivia speaking. So we have a question in the chat which was asking, should the IGFs be organized by governments in their countries? And, I mean, I understand this is an IGF question. We have a couple of IGF experts in the room. I'm not quite sure, as far as I'm concerned, I haven't seen any IGF organized by a country by itself, or as far as a local IGF is concerned, but perhaps it is in some places. So, Cheryl, you might have an answer for this?
Cheryl Engdahl, for the record, and echoing very effectively, I apologise for that. It is varied. It is very varied. And there are a couple of local IGF initiatives within country which are predominantly sponsored and supported by the government in a given country. We also get a lot of support for many of the regional or sub-regional initiatives from what's considered the host government in whatever country we're holding our meeting. And that should not be underestimated. That is a serious and very, very valuable contribution made, both in kind support, in diplomatic and political support, in cold hard cash in some cases, and of course in resourcing of people to be present and assistant, and that may vary very much. So what you'll see in the Asia Pacific regional IGF with the amazing support we've had in the last couple of years, just and only to just look at the last couple of years, the one immediately past and the present, the support we've had from the government in South Korea and the government in India has been quite amazing and perhaps quite disproportionate to what you may see in some other regions. But a different situation, a different time, different sets of topics, different motivations for governments to be involved, and you'll get that entirely differently. In terms of national initiatives, and here I'm speaking specifically from an Australian point of view, where as the administrator of the .au space, so of the country code for Australia, it is far more appropriate for us to put in the resources and expand our multi-stakeholder model and be inclusive of government as one of many stakeholders and that's how we manage it. And I think you'll find many national initiatives, because that's where the resources are capable of being drawn from, would choose to do it this way. Other national initiatives, you would have almost a cooperative, where in fact it is the component parts of what makes up the multi-stakeholder model that are coming together in a cooperative time and putting forward the resources. But from an Australian perspective, we certainly have decided that AU is the vehicle which will then gather the rest together. I hope I've just said that there's a lot of depth, there's a lot of breadth, there's a lot of colour, and there should be. It should not be one size fits all. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. It's Olivier speaking. And I think we've pretty much circled the whole IGF issue. This is really the time to speak about GAC issues. So let's go back to Christopher Wilkinson, and then we'll have to let Heather go, because she has a long day ahead of herself. So,
thank you, Christopher Wilkinson. To follow on, the European IGF is not organised by governments. Otherwise known as the Eurodig, DIG, it's not organised by governments. Heather, my question is, how will the GAC approach the question of accountability in the sense of who is accountable to who? We've just heard one model from Steve, who outlined a sort of basically internal to the ICANN community model of accountability. As you know, there are other models in town. I don't want to comment on them, except to say that there are issues of accountability within the ICANN structure for which there are seriously interested stakeholders outside the ICANN structure. Just by way of example, privacy rules, IDNs, and the conditions of competition in the DNS market. So how would GAC approach this? I don't ask you to say what the GAC position would be, but it is a methodological question as much as a policy question.
Thank you for the question. So, the GAC is part of the ICANN framework, and there are these two processes underway. One of them, a process convened by the ICANN community regarding IANA stewardship, and the other one more of an ICANN specific process, if you will, to look at enhancing the organization's accountability. So these are the processes that are immediately available to the GAC, and where you have expertise in the GAC, as far as officials go, governments go, about these kinds of matters and how they relate to the domain name system or the policies related to the unique identifiers for the Internet. So it's quite natural that the GAC and GAC members individually would look at what are the ways to contribute to those two processes as we understand them currently. There's a lot of interest in understanding the relationship between those two tracks and precisely how that functions. But at this point, we're wanting to look at the process issues, so clarifying, for example, that there may be GAC views on issues related to IANA stewardship, and in that situation, how would we convey them? How would we appoint people to participate in the coordinating group and this kind of thing? And the same is for enhancing accountability. Although, for example, the board has, I think, a much more clear role regarding the enhancing accountability track of discussions. As for individual governments, they will go to discuss things in the forum of their choosing. And some will choose ICANN, some will choose the GAC. in some cases to be part of a consensus view, if not consensus advice specifically, and others will want to engage and discuss in other places as well. So we can anticipate that. I would point out that we do have, again, 141 governments in the GAC, and we have observer organizations to the GAC that can at least have briefings, receive briefings and information about these issues via the GAC. So I think the way I view this is that the GAC is really central to handling those questions and being useful to both ICANN and GAC members in facilitating inclusion and engagement and so on in those matters.
Thank you very much, Heather. It's Olivier speaking. We're running out of time. In fact, we have kind of run out of time since I know you have to leave. Fatima, I know you, was it Fatima or Antonio who had a question? Is it possible to submit it in writing and then Heather will reply to it afterwards? I'm really sorry. It's just that we still have two more people and we only have 15 minutes left. Okay, well, thanks very much, Heather.
Thank you, everyone. Appreciate it.
Just a comment, and then I'll pass it over to Sam Lanfranco and Rudy Vantnig from the non-for-profit operational concerns. There was a comment in the GAC with regards to ICANN being the bookkeeper of the Internet and not the regulator, and this could be a bug, not a feature. I think this is something we've heard here before. And with regards to watching, who watches the watchers? Anyway, over to you, Sam and Rudy.
Thank you, Olivier. I think that many of you know me already from my previous presence in ICANN. I was among you, and I'm still among you. I cannot leave Alec just behind me. The reason why I am here and not Marie-Laure is that Marie-Laure couldn't stay on as chair of the NPOC because she had a professional engagement that didn't allow her to stand any longer. And we are actually in election process that ends end of this week, and we will have a new ExCom taking seat. Just to give you a very quick idea of what NPOC is, well, it's the Not-for-Profit Operational Concerns constituency. That is, I think, one of the youngest constituencies in ICANN. It has been created in June 2011, basically due to the fact that there was this new GTLD program and that there was not enough representation in the GNSO for that group. In fact, the NPOC is the home for the not-for-profit organizations like NGOs and like even some of you at large structures are also NGOs. So it's interesting to have your voice among the what I would call the implementation policy. I, for a long time in at large, have seen a lot of very, very, very good, marvelous advice going up to the board. But as we know that advice is something that is not binding, you need a process where you can bind the board to execute. And that's the reason why I moved over from the advisory into the GNSO. And I would like to have more of you or colleagues of you or people you know in the not-for-profit world to stand up with us, because we need many, many heads in the many, many working groups that are, in fact, directing the work that is happening when we talk about policy and policy implementation. I'm actually myself engaged in three working groups, and one is a quite interesting one. It's revealing a lot of issues that we didn't think about before. It's a translation and transliteration of contact information in And that's a real sticky one, because the problem that we have and that we encounter is that we have to wait for many input from other working groups. And it appears that that starts to be one of the issues that we are discussing also in the GNSO itself. It's about the fact that we have a lot of working groups and PDPs going on at the same time on similar topics. The problem is that as we are all volunteers and we need more volunteers on board, as we are all volunteers, it's all about time. And time is precious, as we have deadlines in what we do. And I think that's one of the aspects that we need to cover as soon as possible. Still being a very young constituency, we need more people on board to be able to raise the voice of the not-for-profit, raise the voice of the NGOs, because they are, in fact, organizations that are also representing a lot of users. And if we want to hear the voice of users, well, it's through those organizations that we can bring them up inside the GNSO and have a better representation of what are the needs. And we know all that when we discussed in 2009, I remember the first summit where we have been standing, and when I say we at large, have been standing at the mic asking for more attention for the community-based GTLDs, we very often were blown away again. And that's one of the reasons why NPOC has been created. That's one of the reasons why we try to stand up now and bring the requirements of the users to the table. And I'm quite happy with the way it works actually in the GNSO. There is a very good understanding, there's a good representation. And as I said, I'm impressed by the way that we can do things. I thought that the GNSO was a very closed world, but it isn't. It's an open world, and we would enjoy having you among us. Maybe, Sam, you have something to add to what I said?
Thank you. Thank you, Rudy. Okay. I'm Sam Lanfranco. I'm currently the membership committee chair of NPOC. But I'm going to talk at a different level in about 90 seconds, and that's that my background is as an economist and a social scientist. And one of the important things that I struggle with is that the Internet is young, ICANN is young, NPOC is young, the IGF is young, and in particular, NPOC and IGF. Most young humans, we have an argument, is it nature or nurture? There is no nature here. There's only context. Everything we build here, we have to nurture. The context is the Internet. So when we're asking, what should IGF be doing? What about regional ones, NPOC? We have two responsibilities. One is the voice going up, trying to influence policy, having stakeholders talk to policy. But the other one, and this is particularly important for the question about IGFs and regional IGFs, the other is to build the stakeholder dialogue between stakeholders so that the stakeholders themselves can participate better in where things are going. Just as the GAC carries on an internal discussion to kind of resolve how it thinks about things and doesn't always fully agree, the same thing needs to be happening. We need to nurture these institutions at each and every level. If we were the ILO, which has been around the International Labor Organization for 95 years, a certain amount of how we did things would be already based on lessons learned. But we have to view ourselves at this point as learning organizations, and those really good questions give us a work agenda. They're not questions to which we have answers because of our nature. So think of these things, think of NPOC, think of ICANN, think of the IGFs, not as just policy forums to feed policy up, but as opportunities to build an internal learning community at various levels, between the, and in particular between those stakeholders who have to find not just how they have a voice in what we do, but how they have a voice in the rest of the Internet.
Thank you, Sam. I think it's time to come to the question session, because in about 5 minutes we have our Constituency Day meeting starting, starting at 8:30 till 12, and I would love to have some of you in the room. It's in the Thames Suite, so there is space to come.
Thank you very much, Rudy. We have Christopher Wilkinson first, and then Evan Leibovich afterwards, and we have Marie McCursha. So Christopher Wilkinson. And I think that will be three questions is enough for 5 minutes. So please make them short, and short answers, of course, as well. Christopher.
Thank you, Christopher Wilkinson. Rudy, Sam, thank you very much. It's very interesting, and I'm very sympathetic to the outline that you've given us. But my first concern is, what happened to the non-commercial users community, and how do you distinguish the NPOX input from the more or less established non-commercial group? And secondly, more generally in the ICANN context, I have the impression that the user community's interest and representation is in practice fragmented. And you have at large on one hand, you have the non-commercial group, you have your group and other user groups, and I'm not convinced that that's the best way to go in the longer term. So, two, not critical, but I hope provocative, small questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Christopher. It's indeed two good questions. I will take up one of them, and I will allow Sam to respond to the other one. Actually, NPOC is part of what is called the Non-Commercial Stakeholders Group, NCSG, in which you have also another constituency called the NCUC, the Non-Commercial Users. And they are addressing more the aspect of the non-commercial user in itself. It was created before NPOC was created. So, in fact, we have a little bit of two silos in that structure that we need to work on to get better aligned on things we want to do. And that's one of the missions that I'm going to take up, as I probably will be the new chair starting next week. One of the issues that I want to take up is to have a better presentation of what both constituencies are representing and what their mission and their objective is. For us, it's quite clear. We need to bring to the table the NGOs. We know that most of the NGOs even don't know that ICANN exists. And then I think that's one of the issues. ALAC has demonstrated that it is possible to show to the world and to the users and to other communities that ICANN exists and how ICANN operates. It's NPOC's mission to do the same for the NGOs, which is a large group, and especially with the new GTLDs that are going to be rolled out, it's going to be huge in impact on what's going on, especially for them. As for instance, just taking one sample on which I think we were going to work very quickly, is about the point that an NGO most often doesn't have the funding, the finances, to protect their brand. There is a solution that has been created in the mechanism of this new GTLD program. It's called the Trademark Clearinghouse. And maybe there is a way to get them a cheaper protection of their brand through that mechanism. We're going to have a discussion next week already in Brussels on how can we get this solution brought up for them. Maybe that's something where we will have a kind of win-win situation, and we will help the community to come into the world that is not known to them. So I think that is an answer of where we position NPOC today vis-a-vis the non-commercial user group. And for the second one, I would like Sam to answer.
First of all, thank you for the three questions, and my first request to you is keep those three questions on the agenda forever, because every time we get a working answer to one of those questions, it's going to generate new problems and new questions. This is an ongoing process. It will never be over. We're going to have to nurture this thing forever.
So really, that's about all I would say. The internal issues within ICANN, as to who covers which base and how they cooperate, I see NPOC as reaching back into a whole community through the representatives of the various NGOs, the nonprofit sector people, and that it has a responsibility in that direction, not just to pull people in, but to work in the other direction. I think the IGFs will have that same obligation. It's as though a bunch of people woke up one morning and discovered they are citizens of a new country. The country has no rules and regulations, and they're not quite sure what it means. That's where we are now. We have to sort that out. And reason dialogue between constituencies and constituents and individuals and organizations is absolutely essential. There's no rule book.
Thank you very much, Sam, and I really apologize to those people in the queue, but the 5 minutes were taken with the one question. I know we had Evan Leibovich and Murray McCursher. If you, like for the previous speaker, submit your questions in writing, we will be forwarding them over to NPOC, and we'll publish the responses on the mailing list. I thank all of you for coming here. We now have a meeting with the board, which happens next door. So I invite you all to pack up and come next door to join the meeting with the board. Thanks to everyone, and speak in a few minutes. This session is now adjourned, and thank you, of course, for all of our guests who came in today. Thank you.